Welcome to Dr. Brian Boxer Wafler's health show. Dr. Brian will pull the curtain back on viral TikTok health videos and label them as cap, false, or no cap, true. Even if you aren't on TikTok, now is the time to get on board, have fun, and join his podcast. Dr. Brian is a board-certified eye surgeon specializing in advanced LASIK, keratoconus, wider eyes, dry eyes, cataract surgery, and reading vision improvement at the Boxer Wafler Vision Institute in Beverly Hills, California. Also, please remember, Dr. Brian is a doctor, but he is not your doctor. He is here to provide general information, not medical advice. So you should always check with your doctor before relying on any information.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the health show. And today I am super, super excited because you can see we've got twin doctors, Jeremy and Jermaine Hogstrom, in the house. Indeed.
How's it going?
How's it going? And I'm super excited because they are so busy. Started practice. We're going to get into that. And we're going to talk a bit about how they even got into social media, how they became doctors, and how they became twins, because they elected to do that.
I understand.
Then we're going to talk about some videos too. And that, you know, cap or no cap out there as well. So, you know, guys, welcome to the show. Very excited and very happy that you took time out to be here.
Yes.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. We're excited to be here. We really are.
Well, thanks for being had. So let's just jump right into it. So you are incredibly adored out there in social media. And then I can only imagine even more so by your patients now that you're in practice, you finished your residency. But just so everyone can get to know you a little bit, why don't you tell us a bit about yourselves? Take us back, maybe not to the womb, but how you got, you know, where you grew up, where you're from, and how you eventually followed medicine, especially together, and, you know, how that process happened, because you seem to be doing everything really in tandem.
Yeah, I'll let you go ahead and start.
And you answer questions in tandem too.
At the same time. I think, you know, it all goes back to November 2nd, 1991. That's where it all started. That's where our world began. So we were born on that day. And, you know,
November 2nd?
8 minutes. Yeah.
That's my birthday too.
Wait, really? Are you serious?
How did we not know this?
We just found this out.
There's no way.
There, yes way. Yes, November 2nd. Yeah, a few years before you guys. Just a few.
Just a little.
Just a few. I was a brunette back then.
I have no idea. What? That is amazing.
I have never met anyone else with my same birthday, actually.
Right, same. Me neither. Maybe one or two people, but that's about it.
Wow, this is clearly meant to be.
Clearly. I believe so. That's amazing.
Yeah, but, and you guys are nice Scorpios, too.
Yes.
So are you.
Wow. Any case, so sorry to jump in there, but that's pretty wild. I didn't know that.
Coincidence. Wow. Yeah. So I'm actually about 8 minutes older, believe it or not. I am the older one, but you know, we've, you know, always kind of done, we've done a lot of things to get together. And I think, you know, it still carries on to this day, but we've done a lot of things together. We've grown together. We've had fun together. We've had hard times together. And then we eventually decided to go to med school, which we were somehow able to do that together as well, you know, which has been a blessing. And it's really been a really good experience. I think it's a very unique experience. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah. You know, growing up, it was one of those things where, you know, a lot of people ask us what kind of got us into the field of medicine. And really what I'll have to say is that it was multiple different factors. It wasn't like any one inciting event, I would say. You know, growing up, our mother, she did a lot of home health physical therapy. She still works as a physical therapist. She manages an office and everything. But seeing how much she cared for her patients and would, you know, really go out of her way, because she practiced in a really rural area of Mississippi. So you really have to, you know, be really hardworking and really willing to drive some distances to really give your patients the care that they need, and that, you know, not everybody's willing to put in that kind of hard work. And really seeing that kind of work ethic, you know, from her in the field of medicine and the way that she contributed was very inspiring. And likewise, you know, our father, he's nowhere near in medicine at all.
Nowhere close.
He's more in the field of media, hence I think where we get some of our media liking and background from. But seeing
sense.
How hard, yeah, I know, right? But seeing just how hard he works as well has always driven us to work hard, and whatever direction that we decided to go in life, you know, just to put our best foot forward and to really give it our all and just to try to be the best that we can in that area. And so thus, how did medicine kind of come into all this? Well, you know, growing up, we both just kind of liked sciences. Yeah. And I mean, initially, I thought I was going to be like, maybe like a lawyer or something. Because, you know, as a kid, I don't really know what I really want to be.
Yeah.
And I think you thought.
I was kind of more, I was like, you know, at first I was kind of into like, I think more like house design, architecture, that kind of thing. But then, you know, I was like, I couldn't see myself probably doing it long term. So I was like, no. And then, you know, I, you know, the medicine vibe there. So that was pretty cool. And I was like, you know, I think this is kind of where I should be.
Yeah. So, you know, we just liked a lot of the science classes growing up. And then what really, I think, did it for us, though, was really our getting a lot of our volunteer experiences that we used to do. We used to volunteer at the hospital, really starting in high school. And it wasn't necessarily with always medicine in mind, but it was just right. A way to be involved in the community and a way to, you know, kind of feel like I'm giving back a little bit. But thus, you know, we found ourselves in the hospital doing such various different activities and things. And we just liked, I think we both just really loved our patient interactions. And
overall, yeah, like I would say, yeah, that's exactly what it was. I think it's just being able to interact with patients, being able to care for them, you know, seeing them improve, hopefully, you know, over a period of time. And just kind of really building that relationship with them, you know, it's, I really do enjoy it.
Yeah. So we've seen both sides of medicine. We've seen what it's like to be, you know, what rural medicine looks like when the nearest hospital is maybe 30 minutes away. That's considered like, you know, a great facility to really take mm-hmm. care of some emergency stuff. So you see what that looks like and what poor outcomes can look like if you don't have quick access to emergency care too. So growing up with all of these things combined, all the powers of all that combined kind of led us into the field of medicine. And so here we are. And then how we chose what we want to do is a whole different story, but
right.
You know, it's really interesting because you actually brought up something which is becoming more and more rare, which was you really enjoy and value the relationship with the patient.
Yeah, I do.
And so many people in medicine now just don't have the ability really to have a proper relationship with the patient anymore. Just because of the way medicine is moving, it's like this freight train that's just, you know, getting bigger and more depersonalized. So it's really refreshing to hear you say, you know, relationship, because that's not a lot of times in a conversation, you know, with the doctor, just because usually the way medicine is in their practice these days. So that's great.
Right. You know, and trust is having, I always try to make it a point to really get to know my patients, because if they don't trust you, then how are they going to comply with anything that you have to recommend at all? Right. And I find that my patients that do the best are the ones that I have the great relationship with. And so I try to make that.
So I actually want to talk a little bit about, you know, you grew up in Mississippi, and then where'd you go to DO school?
Yeah, so for med school, we went to, so it's Edward Villa College of Osteopathic Medicine. And, you know, they have a campus in the Virginias, they have one in the Carolinas, they have one in Auburn, Alabama, which is where we went to. And I think they just opened a new one in Louisiana. But yeah, so we were in Auburn, which I would say is a very unique experience. So we're equal to anyone there.
We're equal.
You know, it's a college town, but it was very fun being there. I think it was a great environment.
Yeah, I completely enjoyed that experience. Yeah.
And so, you know, some people are a little confused. They don't know the difference. You know, they're both medical schools, but they don't necessarily know the difference between like a, you know, conventional medical school and then osteopathy medical school. So how would you describe those differences?
Yeah, you know, I always like to say that there are more similarities than there are differences. And being that, you know, MD school versus DO school, and it's always been a hot topic of debate. But, you know, this. So what are the similarities? Let's start there. So, you know, you do have the same 4 years of medical school. Right. You have 2 years of in-class training. You have, you know, the same 2 years of rotations that you do in the hospitals and things. And oftentimes it'll be alongside your MD counterparts and vice versa. And but where do things differ is when we get into a lot of what we call osteopathic manipulative medicine, which for lack of a better term, some people might equate it to like a chiropractic type work, but it kind of goes a little bit deeper, but they do have very similar origins actually. So the guy that founded osteopathic manipulative medicine, essentially OMM is what we call it for short, was actually an MD. Dr. A.P. Steele is his name. And the reason why he essentially founded this area of medicine was because as he practiced back in the, I want to say early 1900s, ish, yeah. I think I have my history right. But was that because he found that sometimes at that time, the conventional medicine wasn't always working. Mm-hmm. And so he was looking into alternative therapies that could potentially work. And so he looked into a lot of these things, and it consists of essentially a lot of soft tissue work, a lot of musculoskeletal things, a lot of lymphatic drainage techniques that are still used widely today in the field of medical massage therapy and chiropractic work too. And so he found that these things could actually be very effective and very useful and promoted great healing, actually. And so that being said, that's part of what we're trained in as well, is sort of that really hands-on approach to treatment and examination and all those things, in addition to what we would consider, I guess, our traditional like medical training and classroom training stuff. So we would spend countless hours in labs. We had these nice tables that we would practice. We had classes and we would practice on each other. I feel like sometimes it turned into more like a massage session because everybody was tired and like, oh, just, you know, do this and not fall asleep. But no, we will really learn some really nice and useful techniques. And the convenient part was that as a medical student, well, if I had a neck problem, then I could just ask one of the doctors and they would. And a lot of times the best ones were always the sports medicine fellowship doctors because they were the best with the hands-on manipulations and things like that. So, but yeah, it was great training. And not everybody necessarily, that's a deal, practice it full out to that extent. But there's still some favorite things that you still retain and like to use here and there. So,
yeah.
I can personally attest to having some real specialized massage techniques that help with, in my case, when I was rowing competitively, sometimes I get not carpal tunnel. Yeah. I would get epicondylitis, like medial epicondylitis, from rowing and all that repetitive motion. And so I had been through getting steroid injections, even PRP. And in fact, I even had bone marrow. And, you know, things kind of helped eventually, but what really clinched it was I went to a physical therapist who was super in tune with the way the body works mechanically, musculoskeletal wise, and said, you know, people get these tendonitis. I don't even know how you plural all of that. I don't know if anyone's ever done that until this moment.
Let me Google this real quick.
Exactly. I slaughtered it. But you know, when people get that tendonitis condition, it's because of upstream, usually muscle tension that kind of is this chronic muscle tension that is just pulling against, like, let's say in this case, you know, the tendon attachment there. So what he did, and I sent my wife and friends there because after this, I was just a true believer. He would work on relaxing the muscles up here in the shoulder or the biceps in the more, specialized muscles. And then it relaxes that tendonitis. And so for example, my wife had really bad tendonitis in the elbow and she never had a shot or an injection. And he did probably about 8 sessions with her. Totally gone. And I've referred a lot of friends to them too. Yeah. Again, conventional medicine, even a lot of physical therapists aren't aware of that kind of interconnection. So for sure, musculoskeletal is really important. So I think the alternative training is really important. And even in my TikTok, duets that I've done with a lot of videos, when I do the research, there's some natural alternative medicine treatments that are out there that work and they have science behind them, but just a lot of MDs won't know about it necessarily. Right. So I think that's a great advantage of a DO school, certainly too. Now, for anyone who's listening, some people might be pre-med or they may already be in medical school. Maybe for somebody who's thinking about going into medicine and just everybody, I know you're following along their story, but we're going to start getting into the meat of some of these videos on TikTok that we're going to comment on shortly. But it's just so fascinating to be able to talk to them right now. So I want to take advantage of getting to more backstory with them. But so somebody wants to go in medicine and be a doctor. What advice would you have for them? Because sometimes it could be a little daunting, right? When they're
I would say just start early with getting exposure. You know, try to start learning, what could be a possible area of medicine that you like. Try to get hands-on experience too, wherever you can, whether if it's shadowing a surgeon, if it's shadowing a doctor in their office. You know, try to get as much exposure as you can. Even before going to med school, try to get an idea of, what does the path look like? how do you get into med school? Once you get into med school, how is that going to be? You know, what kind of stresses might encounter? So I just say start early.
Yeah. And I'll have to add, don't limit your options. Don't limit, you know, don't be so set on one school or so set on one
field,
you know, explore all of your options, because the one thing you can do is limit yourself and say, well, I only want to get into this one school and for this one thing. And then if that doesn't happen, then what, right? You know, don't go into it just necessarily with, well, I want the most prestigious school. Because at the end of the day, a doctor is a doctor, right?
Yeah.
And so you're going to be practicing right alongside somebody that went to Yale or whatever. So, you know, you don't have to necessarily always aim for the most, the top of the top. It's nice to have, actually, but if you don't get that, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
And so explore all of your options, both MD and DO, and you'll find, you know, some amazing opportunities out there. So
absolutely.
Now, a lot of people think when you go to medical school, you don't have a life. Did you guys have a life during that process?
Somewhere in there.
I mean, we tried to, you know, somewhat balance out things a little bit with hanging out with friends and, you know, try to make sure that we do have, you know, times where you do have fun and are able to enjoy yourself. Because, you know, it is a stressful, you know, thing. It's not a, I wouldn't say it's an easy path. There's a lot of stress involved, but you do have to make sure to find time for yourself or you will go crazy.
So, you know, I mean, we did, have you seen The Resident or Grey's Anatomy? No, I'm just kidding. So we had a pretty good friend group in medical school. So I feel like in a way we always pushed each other to always get out and do things. And, you know, usually for us, it was always like after a long test or a long day that we'll just say, hey guys, let's just go grab some lunch or some dinner somewhere. Or, you know, we would think because Auburn was close to Atlanta, we would say, hey, let's go to Atlanta on like Friday and just kind of, you know, or Saturday evening or whatever, and just kind of spend the day and do things just as a way to kind of escape and get out and to kind of reset and refresh in yourself and, you know, to get back to grinding. So, yes, we did. And for the most part, still try to maintain somewhat of a life. It wasn't as much of a life that I would have outside of medical school, but it was still a life nonetheless, somewhat.
I think that's great advice because you have to. I have opportunities. You have to create opportunities and they kind of happen naturally. Like that was my experience in med school to blow off steam. And because you're going through this experience with everybody, like you're in the heat of the fire, those forged bonds are really strong with your friends. Like we would have poker parties, you know, with all sorts of stuff that go along with that and just have a lot of fun on weekends and working out a lot, I think was really helpful too.
Working out, you have to maintain that.
Yes.
Yes, you have to maintain that. The working out is super important.
So absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay, and just bring us up to date. So where are you now? You finished your residency, and so you're in internal medicine, and I know where you are, but I like to hear you say it.
So we finished our residency. We were in Detroit for a long 3 years, and COVID made that 3 years even more interesting.
Like 6 years.
And but yeah, it felt like twice the time, really. But, so COVID definitely kind of threw a wrench in it, but you know, it still provided for a very, I guess I'll say, unique learning experience.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, we were, I mean, talking about being tossed into the fire, you know.
Seriously.
There were more bonds that we made with our co-residents at that time. That were bonds that were welded together. But no, so we did that for 3 years. We went to Authority Health, that was our program. And shout out to Authority Health, by the way.
Yep.
And so once you graduated there, we came back and we were actually now in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is where we're originally from. Born and raised originally. And then now we're practicing internal medicine, doing primary care here. And it's been an interesting experience, I must say. We feel like we've been well received here. Our hospital system is very...
A lot of excitement.
Excited and have really embraced our social media-ness. And we weren't sure how that was going to go. So really from the front, we were like, just so you know, just we do so all this social media stuff.
Right.
We know that can sometimes be in the role of medicine.
Yeah.
You know?
But they're really good about it. And I think they actually like that aspect of it, actually, that, you know, we try to, you know, get out into the community. We try to, you know, help to really inspire people and really show people what is possible, right? Because, you know, it's a hard path, but it's a doable path. It's not impossible.
Right. So now we're practicing internal medicine. We are accepting new patients for anybody that's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. But we're, you know, we have the opportunity. We've been doing a lot of news talk shows and just, you know, talking about medicine and kind of getting the word out. Like this month is Men's Health Month. So we were
on the local news, and we were just talking about important things for men's health. We talked about prostate cancer screenings. We talked about men's mental health. That's always a huge topic. Then, you know, men's mental health oftentimes gets kind of pushed to the side because, you know, guys sometimes want to be strong and don't want to talk about, you know, what's really going on with their anxiety or their depression. So we kind of talked about some of that too and why it's super important to really address those things. Yeah. So,
and that's one of the other really good things here. You know, we've, you know, a lot of the news stations have reached out to us and we've gotten to really just do several segments with them. So they've, you know, they've also been pretty well receiving of us too. So really enjoying it.
And I think it's just an extension of what you both are really good at, which is taking medical information and making it really easy to understand for people, even complex topics. And that's what you do on social media. So that sounds like just a natural extension to be doing that, you know, for TV as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I always tell people that, you know, when it comes to how I like to, well, the biggest thing that I like to say is this, is that my biggest thing is that I like to make sure people understand that physicians, medical professionals are people too. Right. And of course, foremost, I think that was the biggest thing of, that was one of our biggest things going into social media was that, because, you know, we're ourselves, wherever we are, you know, we will always be who I am. I'll always crack a joke here and there. And whether, you know, in the clinic, we all, you know, we'll crack a joke here and there too. And I'm not gonna, you know, necessarily try to change myself to try to appease like what people might have an idea of what physician has to be. I don't know, a cold personality, a nerd or something, right? You know, we come in all shapes and sizes and personalities. And I think that sometimes people forget that. And so being able to bring that and kind of highlight that too, and in our own way of sort of sharing medical information is what we try to do best. And it comes naturally because we don't have to pretend to be anybody.
Yeah, I don't have to think about it. Yeah, exactly. It's not something that I think about how to do. It just, I just kind of do.
Well, and that's really what people expect to see on social media is authenticity, right? Not a super curated, some people do, but I think most people really want to just see a natural, uncurated aspect of somebody. And that's why they feel they get to know people. You know?
Right, yeah.
So that's why it's so powerful, especially for doctors or for anyone who's offering a service, people can feel they get to know the person even before they come in. You know, because I see patients for lots of different conditions who fly in. One of my specialties is keratoconus. I can't tell you how many times somebody's flown in from another state. They've never met me in person, but they might say, I feel like I know you, like when I walk in and introduce myself.
I don't, you know, if I had to get treated for a keratoconus, Dr. Walker, I would fly to see you because I feel like I know you. You can operate on my, trust me.
You can operate on my eye even though they don't need it.
I don't need it, Dr. Muck. I trust you.
If it's a cataract, I'm coming to you.
Well, don't rub your eyes, and you definitely won't get keratoconus, or at least you won't spur it on if there's already keratoconus. So. Yeah. Well, great. Why don't we switch gears and now play some videos, and then let's comment on them, shall we?
All right.
This will be fun. Okay, so this first video is going to talk about something I think a lot of us have or have had at some point, which are those air fresheners in the cars or even at home, right? Have you guys ever had one of those?
I have about three of them.
I have it right now.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a very apropos video. Let's watch this and then let's talk about it.
Bro, you just tossed out my air freshener.
Yeah, and saved your life.
Oh, I gotta hear this one.
Well, you've been complaining about being irritable and having brain fog all the time. This might be the source.
Dude, you're full of it.
Full of truth, bro. That happy little Christmas tree is full of neurotoxins that can cause brain inflammation. Oh, come on, man. I've been using these since high school. Well, your glory days of ignorance are over, man. A recent study states that the limitless usage of fragrances are vicious and tied to diabetes, obesity, cancer, and depression, among other pathologies. So what you're saying is this could be the real reason I get brain fog, headaches, and have low energy? Yes, it all adds up. And our perception of this stuff is that it's safe. But in fact, as the study states, this stuff is as toxic as sniffing glue. Can I just use one of those plug-ins instead? Nope. All those synthetic air fresheners that you may be using in your car, home, workplace, or even your bathroom are bad for you. Got it. So now, what's the alternative? First, try taking a shower, bro. But seriously, using coffee beans, vanilla beans, or wrapping your favorite spice in cheesecloth is the way to go.
Well, guys, as proud owners of car air fresheners, do you think this is cap or no cap?
You know, somehow I feel like there's probably some truth behind this somewhere. Yeah, you know, I would have to agree that I think that this is no cap. So
correct.
Yeah, absolutely. No cap.
Yeah. So I actually did some digging with this, and the study that he actually quoted is an actual bona fide study. And I think probably the key word that's in that study that he quoted is limitless use, right? Because limitless is like constantly being exposed to those air fresheners. And so it's actually true. Research backs up that they are linked in high usage to all those medical conditions, which is pretty surprising. I was really surprised because I don't think anyone ever thinks that, like you said, that cute little Christmas tree, you know, could be causing some problems.
Yeah, I could definitely easily, I can see that, because a lot of these air fresheners, they have so much synthetic chemicals in there that can be neurotoxic. It's very, you know, possible. So, yeah, you know, and I know some of these things because they have preservatives that probably contain formaldehyde and things like that in them. That, you know, I mean, let alone last time I smelled formaldehyde was, well, anatomy lab, but that was not a pleasant smell that keeps smelling every day. But nonetheless, it definitely gave people headaches. It definitely caused some brain fog, actually. So
in anatomy lab, you had some colleagues, some fellow students, where they felt that after?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because I think it's just the, you know, the smell is just so strong, I would say.
Yeah.
Very strong smell.
But with the car air fresheners, it's one of those things where I think people just don't really think about it. It's just one of those everyday things they really just don't think about. Yeah. But I think, you know, people really should probably look more into it, though.
Yeah. Especially even thinking about all the home plugins, the plug-in air fresheners right at home.
Yeah, right.
And it's something that, you know, we should definitely do more looking into. So I'm glad that study is out there, actually, because I've always wondered about it myself, and I never really looked that hard into it until, I guess, now. But it kind of confirms what I did have suspicion of before, actually.
I think it's interesting, too, because if somebody's in a car versus at home and your windows are up, which most people's windows are, you're just kind of contained in this bubble of the, you know, toxin vapors coming off. So you're just like sealed, right? Yeah. And you probably are multiplying by a big factor how much exposure and what you're breathing in, because you don't have any like air coming in at that point.
Yeah. Especially if you have the recirculation button turned on.
Yes. Yeah.
You're really not getting any fresh air there.
Yeah. So now one thing that I did, actually just thinking about it, I never, maybe one time many years ago, probably in my residency, I think I had an air freshener hanging, but I really have never had that. But one time when I would row a lot and then put my stinky rowing, you know, shorts and shirt in the trunk and then go to the office, my car used to really smell. And my wife and I would get used to it. I didn't even know, right? So then like my wife and my kids would come in and we'd go off like to some place and they'd be like, oh gosh, you know, your car really stinks, Dad. And I'd be like, I don't smell. You just get used to it after a while.
Yeah.
So my wife had a really good idea. And this is what this guy talked about in the video, is coffee beans. So we had a bag of coffee beans we stuck in the trunk and opened it. And it actually did help to mask the smell because, you know, that's natural. There's nothing, you know, no issue with having, you know, the coffee like these air fresheners in the car. So that is a good suggestion, is having a bag of coffee beans or a can of coffee beans. Of course, secured, you don't want it to be falling over in the car. So that's a good solution. And I think the showering, like you said, I'm all for hygiene. Personal hygiene is great.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know one thing you can do as well is for those that like to cook and are afraid of their house being, you know, smelling of, you know, food or whatever, you can do like boiling like cinnamon sticks. That actually works really well. Oh. I didn't realize how well it worked actually until I've seen it work. So it works really well. So it really gets rid of a lot of that smell.
Boiling up cinnamon sticks?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some other things too. Lavender also. You know, that's a great smell too, and refreshing. Even lemon, you know, boiling smell. Lemon and just having that. So yeah, there's definitely some things for the house too. Great. Well, let's go to the next video here. Now, this is probably going to be really near and dear to you because this is from a chiropractor. And I think you've seen this guy, right? He's done a lot. He's done a lot. So I'm going to play this next video and let's see what you think about this one.
All right.
Big nose. I'm a chiro. I'll show you how to slim it. Head back, flare your nostrils. Press them and resist it. Repeat it.
All right. Well, this is, you know, part of your training, body manipulation. What about nose manipulations for making your nose smaller? What do you think about that?
I can't say I've really seen that really happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we're talking about really trying to like tone up your nose there, I mean
that would take a lot of work. A lot of work to get that going.
Might be there for a couple of years.
A lot of surgery. Yeah, that's a lot of, well,
but that might work a little faster. No, that's cap all day.
So, yeah, I can't see that
cap
really.
Cap all day and all night.
I definitely cannot see that being effective.
Yeah,
no. A meaningful solution.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, I got to say, some of his videos from his account, like I've even duetted and said that they're like not cap and that they're good information. But then some of these videos like this come out and I'm just like scratching my head, you know, and just
putting on.
Oh, there it is.
All of my caps are backwards because of duetting.
Oh,
so they're all like backwards.
Man. We've got like, you know, gazillion. But these are
you
all.
Have like, you know, what are you doing with all those?
I know. Well, sometimes I like put one on top of the other because it's like such a big cap.
Yeah.
Or if it's like a really big cap, I pull out the big daddy.
Oh my gosh.
Major cap alert.
That I have not seen.
Major cap alert.
Major cap alert.
So, but why don't we do something kind of fun? I mean,
all right.
I sent you those two videos. You want to do a little bit of like a speed round with some videos you've never seen before?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay.
I'm all about it.
Okay. This is a really cool visual one. Okay. This one's just a really fun one to watch. So I'm going to just put it up to the screen.
Eyes actually. All right. You know what's crazy about having these things in my eyes, right? It lets you see how the eyes actually work. Like your eyes don't move very smoothly. Like when I move my head, you can kind of see how my eyes try to track what I'm looking at. Right? But sometimes you can move your eyes smoothly if it's following something. So if I hold my finger out and I move my finger, you can see my eyes moving smoothly. But if I try to just move my eyes like that, you can't do it smoothly.
So that's an interesting phenomenon.
It must be a very severe, severe case of cryptoconus. Very severe.
That's something you can fix surgically there.
No, that's interesting. I mean, so from my perspective, whenever I see somebody that has like, you know, that going on, it's more like a horizontal nystagmus. I kind of get a little concerned for other issues, but yeah.
So I guess like if we try right now to look without tracking something.
Right.
Actually, let me just watch you guys do it and see if your eyes move smooth or if there's little, you know, jerky movements.
Oh, let's see. I'll look that way without tracking. Here we go.
Are you quiet?
Do you notice anything? Unless we don't know.
So it's not smooth.
It's not smooth.
No, it's got little steps.
So if I track.
If you track it smooth, yeah.
Track is smooth.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, let's, Jermaine, why don't you try it now? Just look without tracking. Oh, you're going, how about go a little slower?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
And now track.
I think it's because, not smooth
I think
at
it's because
all.
You're, you don't,
let me give you a
can't
track.
Figure out, follow my finger here. We're doing your sobriety field test here.
Yeah, so I will say it was definitely noticeably smoother with tracking.
Yeah,
it was
very
nystagmus looking without tracking.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering if it's because you don't have something to look at, so your eye is searching for something to focus on as you're going across.
Yes, that makes sense.
Which is why it's
auto focus. Yeah, and it's kind of weird because when I do that, just without focusing, it is really hard to kind of keep that stability because you don't have anything to really like focus on. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, so that's just maybe just a little fun demo of some of our own physiology there with the eyes. Okay, let's show this one here and discuss this. Our old friend, Gua Sha.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
This is a Gua washed out, and this is a face roller. People claim that using this tool will give you an insanely sharp jawline as well as sculpting your face. So if you want the truth, watch this video. What you're supposed to do is take this little rivet and run it across your jawline. A lot of people think this is to remove fat, maybe shape the bone, but that's simply not what it's meant for. What you're supposed to do is rub this across your face, and it rubs the fluid out of your face, also known as bloating. So if you retain a lot of water in your face, this will actually show results, and it will do so pretty quickly. If you're looking for a long-term effect, it's not going to do that for you. And if you have no...
Well, what do you think?
I think it's practical because people, you know, when you wake up in the morning, your face usually is kind of more puffy for a lot of people. So I think there is some practicality behind it.
I think so as well. You know, it kind of reminds me of like some of the lymphatic techniques that we were using, like... Yeah, and you know, OMM and the DO world there, or the sauna space, where it's kind of similar to that. You're kind of massaging the fluid up. So I could kind of see that working if you actually have a significant amount of fluid buildup in your facial area, which, gosh, that means it must be having a lot of fluid buildup everywhere else than to get to your face. But I could definitely see that if it's fluid related. Of course, if it's fat related or bone related, of course not. But I think it's realistic to work,
I have to say, this is like the only Gua Sha video I've seen on TikTok that actually spoke the truth, because he actually said it's just, it's going to move fluid. It's not going to reshape your jawline, which is, you know, what a lot of people are saying it will do, you know, reshape your jawline, and that it's like not permanent because it's temporary, which of course, you know, it'll move the fluid around. So I think good on him for actually being accurate about the Gua Sha. You know, it's summer, and there's a video I posted probably like 3 years ago. And I just posted it again today on Instagram because it's summer and people are in the pool. And it was this guy. I mean, just what some people say out there on social media, it still just blows me away. And this guy is like, you know, underwater saying that he can teach people how to breathe underwater. I don't know if you remember this one, by splitting in their mouth oxygen and hydrogen. So they get oxygen from the water. And I think he was actually selling tutorial lessons for people to do this.
So, now, hold on. Now, last time we talked about splitting atoms, well, you know, explosive things happen. So I'm just thinking to myself, like, if we're really splitting atoms here, well, I guess we're not splitting an atom. I guess we're splitting a molecule technically, but we're still splitting bonds. And whenever you split bonds, energy has to be released, as far as I remember being taught in chemistry and things. So, just wondering.
But I mean, of course, it's BS and it's cap, but just the boldness of some of these claims, it's still just...
It'll blow your mind.
Okay, let's just do one more. We think we got time for one more. Okay.
All right.
Let's see as I look through all the ones that I have saved here. Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. Let's go back to our chiropractor friend. Here's another video. Okay. And let's see what you guys think.
So you're balding. I'm a doctor. I'll show how to regrow it. Apple cider fit with 1 liter of water. Apply it. So you're balding.
Yeah, that's a
I'm gonna have to think real
interesting
long
way of stimulating your hair follicles.
I'm not sure if that's gonna cure the baldness. I don't think I can, you know,
Colin Cap on that.
Colin Cap on that, doc.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, apple cider vinegar. There's no research behind it to help you grow your hair. But, you know, let's talk about some of the things we know that can help grow hair.
Do you want Well, I mean, there's hair transplants. I've seen that working pretty well, actually. There's Xenos mother medications out there. We hear them. I've got the brand name. What's it called? But finasteride.
Finasteride gel.
Helping men.
Minoxidil.
And Rogaine. That's Rogaine, the name I think of. That's the common
That's the brand for minoxidil.
And so those are some of the more common ones. Actually, I have a patient that's using some steroids. Working really well, actually. Even I was shocked how well it works.
Yeah.
But of course, always talk to your doctor before you start that.
What was that?
I said, always talk to your doctor before you want to pick up some Rogaine or whatever you want to try for hair growth, though. There's some things to be discussed.
Well, finasteride, it blocks DHT. And so men have to be a little bit concerned to check their DHT levels because potentially it could affect their libido or erectile dysfunction because of the effect on DHT. So that's why I think maybe those gels have less absorption than a pill. So they can be a little, in case somebody was having some side effects like that. Just to sort of round out, I remember a long time ago, one of the things I was talking about earlier, that there's some holistic treatments that I've actually found were valid, is this one video had gone mega viral a few years ago about soaking rice in water and then overnight and taking the water and spraying it on the hair. And this woman showed her hair from childbirth had grown back. And there's actually research that backs that up for rice water.
Oh, I remember seeing that. Actually, I remember seeing that. And at the time, I kept thinking to myself, like, could this actually work? Because I was like, I never heard of it. And yeah, it's interesting. Bring it up. Because I do recall seeing that.
Yeah.
I was like 20 when I saw that one.
Wow. So do they know why that would happen or what the basis for that is?
Yeah. There was a few Korean studies using rice and the extract from rice. And it, as I recall, I think it's the same mechanism of blocking, aromatase. Or no, it's not aromatase. The enzyme, I'm an eye doctor. So now I can claim my diplomatic immunity.
We'll grant you that.
But it's the enzyme that I think converts to DHT. So it's that actual enzyme. Just like finasteride, it would have that same mechanism.
Yeah, right.
That same they mechanism. Found, yeah. So that can help. And then also rosemary oil or rosemary water on the scalp too can also help grow hair. And there's some research behind that. So there's some really good home remedies. Oh, and of course, a derma roller. You know, a derma roller can stimulate hair growth too. So, but definitely apple cider vinegar on your hair will not.
Okay. Oh boy. Apple cider vinegar, some hot sauce, some sriracha.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It'll stimulate some things, just not the things you want to stimulate.
Yeah, for sure. So guys, this has been great. I can't believe like our time is up. It's just gone by so fast. So I just really thank you so much for taking the time. And I'm so happy that you guys are thriving in your new practice there out in Chattanooga.
Yeah, I'm getting busy. Oh my gosh. Let me tell you. It's picking up quickly.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, with everything you're doing, pretty soon you're going to not be able to take any new patients.
That,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty true.
While you can. Oh gosh, come while supplies last.
Exactly. Supplies last.
Well, one day I hope to get out there when I, you know, can be out there in the South. Definitely, as I talked to you guys before, I was in Memphis and just had a great time and loved the barbecue. So,
oh, absolutely.
Definitely want to try to get out there.
Texas visiting a friend and we had some barbecue out there. It was good.
Oh, yeah.
The brisket was good. I can attest now in person that
it was pretty good, actually.
I was impressed. At first, I couldn't figure out what was the big hype about brisket, but I guess the brisket in Texas is
it's just built different.
It's where it's at.
It's just good. So
yeah, there's always a competition, though. There's always a competition in the regions for who's got the best.
There is. They were trying to talk smack on Tennessee barbecue ribs, and I was like, I don't know about that.
Well, guys, thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it. And have a great evening and look forward to seeing you guys soon.
Absolutely. All right,
you as well.
Bye. Oh, wait, before we go, why don't you tell everybody your handles, like where they can find you?
Oh, absolutely. So you can find us on Instagram at Twin Doctors J. You can also find us on TikTok, especially at Twin Doctors J. That's twin.doctors and .j.
And anything else? How about your practice website?
Yeah, so our practice, we are with CHI Memorial. That's with Internal Medicine Associates. CHI Memorial, CHI Memorial, Internal Medicine Associates here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So you can look for us online and you can find us and book an appointment. So
great. So if you're in Chattanooga or anywhere in Tennessee or anywhere in the South, worth getting Georgia up there to see them and have them be your doctor and your caretaker, because as you can tell, they're amazing. They really care about what they're doing. And super well trained, and you can't ask for a better combination than that, right?
That's right. That's right. Well, a better combination than these handsome faces.
Unbeatable. Yes, the two of you together. Unbeatable. All right, guys. Have a good night.
All right, you as well.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Brian Boxer-Walkler's Health Show. To review the show notes for this episode, which includes a summary, key takeaways, and any links mentioned, visit nocaphealthshow.com. Don't miss another episode and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, make sure to follow Dr. Brian on TikTok at Brian Boxer-Walkler, MD. And remember, Dr. Brian is a real doctor, but he is not your doctor. He is here to provide general information, not medical advice. So you should always check with your doctor before relying on any information.